Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
So welcome back. I want to do a go back or revisit that conversation on, you know, trying to help explain those of us who served in the Marine Corps. Now, one of the things that kind of made me think about this was I was kind of looking at it in a bigger picture, or maybe a more broad type of question. And so here's the question. What is really the problem? Is it that we as a society have become way too thin-skinned? Are we incapable of receiving criticism? No, I can't say we. For the most part, I get criticized all the time. And I got used to that, I guess, in the Marine Corps. I mean, you know, suck it up, Nancy. Anyway, or have we become too insensitive? Is, you know, people like myself, where we give unsolicited advice, we give unsolicited suggestions. What is the real problem? And so the fact is, are we perfect? No, we're not. We're nowhere close perfect. Could we use criticism? Yeah. Does that criticism have to come in a very specific form or very specific manner? If we've become too sensitive that we can't take criticism at whatever degree it comes, and then look at it personally and say, well, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe I better calm down. Maybe I am a little bit too high strung on this issue. Maybe I have, you know, too many emotional bags or too much emotional ties into this. You know, there's reasons why judges are supposed to recuse themselves, because they've already made a decision. They've already been immersed in that and they've come to a conclusion. And so how can you objectively argue new evidence, a different case, and or even if it's a similar case, how can you objectively look at it? So I want to frame this, because every patriot listening, I think we've all criticized these kids of today, the millennials, the kids that are coming out today. And I think a lot of us are criticizing them as parents as to what they're allowing to happen to their children. By allowing their children to have their actual sexual identity, their godly identity, being morphed into something that is contrary to that identity. Are you too thin-skinned, or are we too insensitive? Because I think it's the first or the former, not the latter. And so I want you to ponder on that, because are you too thin-skinned or are you too insensitive? You might be both. One of the things, and I'm just going to throw this out here, and I want you to do the research on this, because don't believe what I say. Go read it for yourself. When we started bringing in soy and soy products into America as baby formula, as a, you know, a staple for diets and so forth, what we started doing was and that was just one of the few things that they started playing with hormonal imbalances. So this actually happened at the end of the 70s, early 80s, when they started creating formula for babies out of soy milk. Similac was one of those. And so what happened is, here we were feeding all of our children, boys and girls, this soy milk. Well, soy milk elevates soy itself elevates your estrogen level. And there's certain foods that will elevate your estrogen level. And so when that happens, that means that in a male, the testosterone level gets suppressed. And if you want to start looking at studies, and if you want to start looking at, you know, what has happened to us as a people, our culture in America, as I'll just call it, because when you really look at these big industries, when you look at big pharma, when you look at big food, there's a lot of intermingling, a lot of business intermingling. And I'm here to tell you that they knew what they were doing, just like the tobacco companies. But it was what they were doing, as we look with this evil eye in judging the tobacco companies and, you know, trying to make their product a little bit more addictive so that it's a little harder for you to get away from it. Well, at least they weren't literally messing up with your genetic code and your divine nature. Because I want to tell you, if you really put it all on the table, I believe that there's been a lot of nefarious businesses out there. This is what happens when businesses allow themselves to start chasing and actually start mingling with the likes of politics and government and so forth. You know, I remember Johnson & Johnson was revered for doing the right thing, for taking all Johnson & Johnson or all Tylenol products off the shelf in the early 80s when there was this crazy guy in Chicago that was killing people. They did the right thing. But look at what Johnson & Johnson is doing today. It seems like every corporation that, you know, had these, I'll just say, laurels of morals, if I could say that. And we look today, and I can easily point to these same companies that seems to have, you know, have taken a turn into moral turpitude. In other words, you know, absolutely no morals whatsoever. The bottom is the limit. And how fast can we get to the bottom? An enlightened society always questions and always looks at what it is doing, what it is question, you know, everything that is, you know, going on, the directions we're taking in every type of case, every discipline, what have you. An enlightened society always looks at how we can improve and actually embraces this one thing that seems to have a real bad connotation. It's called discipline. And this goes back to what I was saying about the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps, out of all the services, absolutely drives discipline into the individual. It not only does that, it also instills them with confidence in leadership and those types of things. Now, I'm not comparing, you know, all the different services. I know that everybody has their affinities, they have their attachments. It is what it is. But I will say this, that if you are looking for making changes in your life, one of the most critical things that you have to develop and or lean on is discipline. Because it takes discipline to make those changes. You have a commitment. And so you have to be 100% in. You've got to be in on this. Now, I was not on Rumble yesterday. And I don't know what happened. They usually send me an invite. And because I didn't get an invite, I did want to crash the party, if you know what I mean. I think I've got to talk to David. I think that they're at a point where, no, we want you to come in every day. And I go, okay, well, we haven't had that conversation. But anyway, so if you tuned in to Liberty Not Tyranny, I apologize, I wasn't there as a, you know, a sounding board answering questions and so forth. Anyway, as you ponder this and you start looking at whether we are really is too thin-skinned, are we, you know, so hypersensitive to anything that's coming at us, or are we, as we deal with other people, are we really too insensitive? I honestly don't think it is that we're too insensitive. I don't think as a matter of fact, I think criticism has become so soft that, you know, people, you know, can't be criticized anymore. At least as people have taken that soft approach of criticism, they just are incapable of really giving the person the information that they really need because they can't deliver it. It's too harsh. Anyway, I want to go through the obligatories. As you know, the show is sponsored by republicreview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of what our founders had established in this Constitution, how this Constitution was defined, what the terms of the contract were. That's what the ratification debates do. They actually provide you the terms of the contract, and they are legally binding. And so as we move forward, right now we're covering the Monroe Doctrine. We'll cover the manifest destiny paradigm and what ended up happening as how we abandoned, I believe, the direction that the divine hand of providence put us. Basically, we were being prepared to actually create a landing platform that all nations who wanted to embrace liberty, all nations who wanted, and all the people of those nations who wanted to live in in a lifestyle and in a culture of liberty, well, we kind of turned our backs on what the divine hand of providence wanted us to do. And there's no reason why we can't start getting back there, but we have a lot of work to do. We're going to be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me get back to the obligatory so we can get back to the Monroe Doctrine. And actually, this is really Monroe's inaugural address. This is not his inaugural address. This was, again, the 1823 address to Congress. Now, most people, I'm going to repeat this because I've said this when we read through the Constitution and when we go through, you know, the presidential addresses every year and going into this, the president, if you look, the responsibility is upon the president to provide Congress at his choosing an address on the State of the Union. Basically, the State of the Union is a presidential controlled thing. He doesn't have to give it to all of Congress. And as a matter of fact, he doesn't even have to give it to Congress directly. Today, with today's technology, the president could actually sit down and do a video and actually just, you know, sit down and present what he wants to say. He could do it just to the Senate. And I'm saying this because a lot of people, you know, a lot of listeners don't listen every day. They have better, they have sweet days and so forth. So we repeat this stuff a lot. And I want to repeat this once again, that because the president has control, if you remember when Aunt Nancy Pelosi started playing with Donald Trump, she thought it was her power to basically be the conductor of the presidential state of the union, where clearly the Constitution didn't grant that. It's not in Article 1, it's in Article 2. And the president could have said, you know what, Speaker of the House, which, or not Speaker of the House, the President Pro Tem, which would have been Vice President Pence, I'm going to go and I'm going to give Congress's address, or I'm going to give the address for Congress to the Senate, and we can record it, and we will allow, you know, those monkeys in control, or whatever you want to call these idiots that are in control of the House of Representatives, then we can let them watch that at their own convenience. As long as he provides it, he doesn't have to do it. There's nothing in there that says he has to go over there in person or he has to bow to the Speaker of the House. And so what's important is that you understand that this is an inaugural, it's not an inaugural, I want to keep on saying that. It is the annual State of the Union type of address that Monroe is providing. But we'll get into that after I get into these endorsements. Fortitude Financial Coaching. If you are at a point, and again, all of these endorsements, all of the promos that I run for these companies, and I need to get some for these other companies like Fortitude Financial Coaching, these are not paid endorsements. If you need to get, and actually I used to listen to and watch the Dave Ramsey shows. Awesome. Awesome. And so Gary Smith with the Fortitude Financial Coaching is offering his services. Contact him. You know, David Ramsey did not create a recipe of people getting rich like brokers charging you a flat out fee every year or every month along with a commission. Reach out to Gary Smith at Fortitude Financial Coaching. And if you need that contact information, it is on my website. Free Constitution classes. You know Keith Broders, we've had him on here before. Hope to have him on soon to talk about this and a lot of other things that he's dove deeply into some of these issues, like the Electoral College. I'm hoping to have him on soon because I've been holding off on the 12th Amendment. We went through the 12th Amendment when we went through the Constitution, but I want to go through the 12th Amendment in detail regarding the history of the Electoral College. And what Keith brings to the table, I think you'll find fascinating. Timber Nation, you're looking for hard furniture. You need to look at Timber Nation. When I say hard, I mean hardwood. Walnut. And walnut is such a beautiful wood. I mean, my desk is in walnut. And when you have real walnut, the depth of the grain, I just love it. Anywho, TimberNation.com. And radio dust covers, for those of you who have high-end audio gear, ham radio equipment, things that cost a pretty penny that you don't want to replace, but you want to protect it, RadioDustCovers.com. Now, I want to tell you this because I told you it was going up onto the website. On the important information links or the important links, what have you, on reclaimingtherepublic.org, I have posted the swamp video. There's a link to it. You can watch it in your browser or you can even download this and you can play this as you start doing events. We're going to start pulling together more videos just like this so that you'll actually be able to, you know, have a resource so that you can go through these things. Eventually, I guess what I should do is probably put my own videos up there, but we have those on YouTube. So you're more than welcome. As you start teaching people what's going on, how bad it really is, Start using videos as a part of your meeting so that people can actually watch well-produced, well-thought-out, you know, ideas and or information so that you can actually, and your group can consume this and go, oh my gosh, if you know any state legislator that says they're going to go swimming in the swamp, then you have to question their motives, because bottom line, they're going in there for money. That's why they're going in there. They're not going in there because they have no ability to change or control it. I don't care how many new Republicans go in. The existing Republicans will convert you. It's kind of like that behavioral study that they did. And I want to share this with you because I believe it was five monkeys in a cage. Five monkeys in a cage were basically given bananas in the cage, and anytime a monkey would go for the bananas to eat them, they would be hosed down. And I mean, a water cannon or something like that would just hose them. And so eventually, it didn't take long for the monkeys to say, okay, we can't have these bananas. Well, so they kept on doing this, and actually, once they replaced all of the original five monkeys, and when they started replacing the monkeys, they stopped using the water cannon because the monkeys began policing themselves. They began disciplining themselves so that they wouldn't get shot with the water cannon. So as they eventually replaced all of the monkeys in there, none of them had experienced the water cannon, but all of them experienced the group discipline and control. So in other words, we didn't have to use, or they didn't have to use a water cannon anymore as they started introducing new monkeys, so that every single monkey that was in there had no idea why they were beating each other and why they were keeping themselves from having something that they loved. That is manipulation, and that's behavioral studies that actually proves how people get conditioned. And so, speaking of conditioning and manipulation, we will be doing the standard Christmas. You're going to want to hear the Christmas show, because when you start looking at a micro view of Christmas and its evolution in America, you can begin to see how what America did actually influenced the world commercially and economically, because Christmas was manipulated into becoming a large into a large economic boon at the end of the year. Now, I'm going to go ahead and dive into this, but if you have any comments, 425-270-5416, and I hope Harry's listening. I know that he needs this more than anybody, and for those of you who don't know, Harry is an old friend of mine. His name's not Harry, but he's an old friend of mine, and he is a progressive, or he served in the Navy, claims to be a, you know, strong defense guy, you know, strong, you know, trade, fair trade, pro-American, but he just could not vote for Trump either election. He voted for Hillary, and he voted for Biden, and I'm going, I don't believe you have those positions. I believe you're really a progressive. He didn't like that. But anyhow, to where we left off, the actual condition of the public finances more than realizes the favorable anticipation that were entertained of it at the opening of the last session of Congress. On the 1st of January, there was a balance of $4,237,427.55. It's kind of nice that he goes into the details. I mean, today we just 4.2 million, right? From that time up to the 30th of September, the receipt amounts to upward of 16.1 million and the expenditures to 11.4 million during the fourth quarter of the year is estimated that the receipts will at least equal the expenditures, and there will remain in the Treasury on the first day of January next a surplus of nearly $9 million. Now, he's rounded it off there. Now, how many people credit Andrew Jackson as the guy that saved our economics? I'm just showing you that financial discipline was important to all the framers. And Andrew Jackson, there's a reason why the first Democratic president is being credited as the most financially responsible guy. However, if you do the history, this guy exceeded government spending than most of the other, all of the other presidents before him, because he grew the spoils system. Everybody got replaced, and he added more positions throughout the bureaucracy. Anyway, on 18, well, let's try to read this date, but anyway, we'll get back to this when we come back from these two promos. But what we want to do is we want to help you understand why all of these things are really important, and then we'll kind of sum up the Monroe Doctrine and the importance of the Monroe Doctrine for us today. Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to try to not go into the details of the numbers, but you're going to see why this is important. Because remember, we were all taught that it was Andrew Jackson who was fiscally responsible. On January 1st, 1825, now this is in a couple of years, right? A large amount of the war debt and a part of the revolutionary debt become redeemable. Additional portions of the former will continue to become redeemable annually until the year 1835. Basically, he's just saying, we're going to be finally getting out of debt in 1835. Now, who's president around that time? Or who got the presidential credit for this? Andrew Jackson. Additional portions of the former are, yeah, okay. It is believed, however, that if the United States remain at peace, the whole of that debt may be redeemed by the ordinary revenue of those years during that period under the provision of the Act of 1817, created on March 3rd. Creating the sinking fund, and in that case, the only part of the debt that will remain after the year 1835 will be the 7 million of 5% stock subscribed to the Bank of the United States and the 3% revolutionary debt amounting to 13 million, both of which are redeemable at the pleasure of the government. Now, Did you hear what I just said? The revolutionary debt was still floating. Now, I've told you and told you and told you. It sounds like an old Rosanna Dana line, but I've told you that when we looked at the Constitutional Convention, when we looked at the Articles of Confederation and how defunct and how they failed, how we weren't paying that debt, that there was really zero effort. The states that were paying, actually, there were a couple of states that were paying, but many of the states, such as Rogue Island, that's right, R-O-U-G-E, Rogue Island, actually inflated their currency by printing a lot of extra money and then giving that to the federal government, not knowing, or at that time, the general government of the Continental Congress, they not knowing that Rogue Island basically devalued their currency with massive inflation. The state of the Army in its organization and discipline has been gradually improving for several years and has now attained a high degree of perfection. The military disbursements have been regularly made, and I'm pointing this out because this is important, made and the accounts regularly and promptly rendered for settlement. The supplies of various descriptions have been of good quality and regularly issued at all of the posts. A system of economy and accountability has been introduced into every branch of service, which admits of little additional improvement. This desirable state has been attained by the Act Organizing the Staff of the Army, passed on 1818. Okay, so what I want to kind of go through this for you. First off, we all know that a standing army was not to be allowed, right? And after the War of 1812 and after they finally got to treaties and so forth, they were supposed to defund and start standing down the army. Now, what was going on? Well, we were starting to do this expanse. We were starting to go into the uncivilized West. And so the government thought that it would be best to create a standing army. Well, actually, the requirement in the Constitution is that they federalize the militia. And whether we like it or not, they should have been spending money and they should have been focusing on disciplining and standardizing the militia of every state so that everybody understood and got trained as they became a part of the militia or even in the unorganized militia. Why is it, and I'm going to say this so you understand, the reason why the framers made it impossible to create a standing army except in the absolute necessity of war, when federalizing the militia was not significant or not sufficient, I should say. The real fact of the matter is the militia was supposed to be sufficient. The federal government and states actually downplayed it. And as George Mason pointed out, the way we got rid of the militia, the way they violated the Constitution is they marginalized it. Fact of the matter is that back when the framers were creating the Constitution, go look at the Virginia ratification debates of the 14th and 16th. They clearly tell you that there is no more greater vehicle or portal to mischief by government when government has the ability to enforce its own laws. Now, people say, oh, well, the army was actually just an enforcement external, and they were using the army, such as the cavalry and so forth, in going west. They were responsible to use the militia. This is why, and who made this act? Who signed this act of staffing the army? The desirable state has been attained, the level instead of the state, the desirable level has been attained by the act reorganizing the staff of the army, passed on 1818, the 14th of April. Who was president then? Oh, the military man, James Monroe. Now, James Madison, I don't believe, would have signed that act. And James Monroe, not really understanding the Constitution, he was just kind of fed along. He didn't understand the theory. This is why if you go read Madison's notes on 1834 on nullification, He wrote that for James Monroe's benefit. Many of those notes that you read, and actually you'll actually find there were they associate specific correspondence to James Monroe, so that people understood what nullification truly is. Nullification is only applicable by the states when there is a problem with the actual law, when there's a deficiency within the Constitution. I say this all the time. When you look at the Constitution and this idea and the fundamental premise that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by, we are all endowed by our Creator, inalienable rights. And so when all of a sudden free states started establishing and throwing off slavery, and then there's this little thing in the Constitution that says if a runaway slave comes to your state, you have to turn him back over. Well, there's a problem with that, because that actually violates the fundamental law. So there was a deficiency within the Constitution. This is where Wisconsin and many of the northern states, and creating an underground railroad and all of these other things, said, we are going to nullify this because there is a problem with the law. Now, when it comes to other things that aren't problems with the law, just absolute overreaches, like applying sales tax or in today's sense, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, all of these applications are violations. You cannot nullify those because it is not a part of the legitimacy of the Constitution. These are all illegitimate. This is why when you go through Madison's notes on nullification, he will clearly tell you that interposition is the only course in dealing with these things, which means that the states have to get together and use the political force necessary in forcing Congress to do their job. Which means, if you read up on Republic Review, that is the extrapolation of this. So as we move forward, now we've kind of cleared out the fact that, oh, well, now we understand where the problem began, and it began under Monroe. We also know that the problem of expanding and kind of anointing the federal government in forcing states to become slave states, it came under Monroe. I believe Monroe was a good man. I believe Monroe was trying to be the consummate, the epitome of a politician in allowing compromise to occur between political factions. I am here to tell you the Constitution has no allowance for compromise. It is in black and white. It is the compact. It either states this and this is what we have to do, or it doesn't state it and we should not be doing it. Anyway, the monies appropriated for fortifications have been regularly and economically applied, and all the works advanced as rapid as the amount appropriated would admit. Now, let me just say this. Had Monroe invested the money in the United States Marine Corps as a Department of the Navy and said, you know what, we're going to be utilizing the Marines to do this, then it wouldn't have been a part of the Department of the Army. But many people, they just like creating larger bureaucracies, and even though they would have bolstered the Marine Corps, they wouldn't have had to bolster, because the Marine Corps already existed and still existed. It's always existed since 1775. So what are we going to do? We're going to continue to, you know, fund something that shouldn't be funded? That's what they ended up erring in. Anyway, three important works will be completed in the course of this year. That is Fort Washington, Fort Delaware, and the Fort at Rigolets in Louisiana. I probably really mispronounced that. It probably has a more of a French sound to it. The Board of Engineers of the Topographical Corps have been in constant and active service in surveying the coast and projecting the works necessary for its defense. The Military Academy has attained a degree of perfection in its discipline and instruction equal, and is believed to any institution of its kind in any country. So now, we're already creating this huge war machine under Monroe. Are you starting to see how we started turning these corners? We will be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I want to be clear. Most people weren't capable of the paradigm shift. When you look at Marines back in this time frame, they were pretty much nautical. In other words, they didn't think of them as a land force, but the Navy and the Marine Corps, because the Marine Corps was the actual hands-on combatants, and they actually did go on land in Tripoli. They were going on land in other places. So the fact of the matter is it would have been a paradigm shift. But see, you have to understand that Monroe looked at land forces as army, and he wasn't, that was his paradigm. And so he was going, because clearly these things that they're doing, they needed to do, but they should never have built the bureaucracy and started creating this standard and creating these great halls for this thing called the army. Had we maintained discipline in the militia, and had they been spending the appropriate money on the militia and pulling the militia into the Marine Corps to supplement the enforcement in the territories and the defense and protection and national security as we were expanding to the West, because that's what we were doing here, then we would have seen that the American government would have been maintaining discipline, constitutional discipline, in doing the things it needed to do without doing something that it really shouldn't be doing. Now, the money appropriated for the use of the ordnance departments, they created an ordnance department for building arms and so forth, has been regularly and economically applied. The fabrication of arms at the national armories and by contract with the department has been gradually improving in quality and cheapness. It is believed that their quality is now such as to admit of but little improvement. The completion of the fortifications renders it necessary that there should be a suitable appropriation for the purpose of fabricating the cannon and carriages necessary for these works. Under the appropriation of $5,000 for exploring the western waters for the location of a site for a western armory, a commission was constituted consisting of Colonel McCree, Colonel Lee, and Colonel Talcott, who have been engaged in exploring the country. They have not yet reported the result of their labors, but it is believed that they will be prepared to do it in an early part of the session of Congress. During the month of June last, General Ashley and his party, who were trading under a license from the government, were attacked by the Rickarees while peaceably trading with the Indians at their request. Several of the party were killed and wounded and their property taken or destroyed. Colonel Leavenworth, who commanded Fort Atkinson at the Council Bluffs, and that's, I believe, in Nebraska or Iowa, Council Bluffs, Iowa, right? The most western post apprehended that the hostile spirit of the Rickarees would extend to other tribes in that quarter, and that thereby the lives of the traders on the Missouri and the peace of the frontier would be endangered, took immediate measures to check the evil. Now, hold on here. Do you understand how evil America was here? Do you understand how the history books showed how we were, you know, the hostile ones? The fact of the matter is, folks, bad things happened on both sides. There were bad players who did things on both sides. But do not buy into the fact that only one, we Americans or the whites, Caucasians, those that, you know, created this country and so forth, that we were the bad ones all in every aspect. That is a crock of crap. With a detachment of the regiment stationed at the Bluffs, he successfully attacked the Rickaree village, and it is hoped that such as an impression has been made on them, as well as on other tribes on the Missouri, as will prevent a recurrence of future hostility. The report of the Secretary of War, which is herewith transmitted, will exhibit in greater detail the condition of the department in its various branches and the progress which has been made in the administration during the three first quarters of the year. I transmit a return of the militia to the several states according to the last reports which have been made by the proper officers in each to the Department of War. By reference to this return, it will be seen that it is not complete, although great exertions have been made to make it so. So, I'm going to take a quick break. As you know, I have told you that it's been the states that have always been the bad players. The states did not want to play this role. States were too busy, especially the politicians, were too busy on trying to figure out how they could either make, you know, more money for themselves and or get more power, you know, and jumping into the federal government and so forth. I mean, these people were selling the states constantly, historically. In America, the states have been behaving badly. And so when the states said, we need our militia back, we want our men back, you know, this thing called the Constitution required the Union, and it required this thing called the militia to function and be able to do things. The militia was the defense. And here the state said, well, we'd rather fund an army because, you know, sharing that taxation would be cheaper, even though it violates the Constitution. The state should have been the valiant guardians of the Constitution and not allowing these types of things to occur. But instead, they were more than willing to allow the federal government to create standing armies of enforcement. And this is what we have today. How many standing armies do we have? Well, there's the FBI, there's the IRS, there's the BLM, there's the Forestry Department, the Department, the Environmental Protection. These are all standing armies, my friend. If they're enforcing federal law that is unconstitutional, these are unconstitutional standing armies. Anyway, as the defense and even the liberties of the country must depend in times of imminent danger on the militia, it is of the highest importance that it will be well organized, armed, and disciplined throughout the Union. Well, you know what? If you're only doing that in a classroom and you actually have a standing army out there doing that, Monroe, then you're not actually disciplining and building up and utilizing the militia and creating this relationship that should have been happening. Anyway, the report of the Secretary of War shows the progress made during the first three quarters of the present year by the application of the fund appropriated for arming the militia. Much difficulty is found in distributing the arms according to the Act of Congress, providing for it from the failure of the proper departments in many of the states to make regular returns, provides that the system of tactics and regulations of the various corps of the regular army shall be extended to the militia. This is a good thing. That this act has been imperfectly executed from the want of uniformity in the organization of the militia, proceeding from the defects of the system itself, and especially in its application to that main arm of the public defense. It is thought that this important subject in all its branches merits the attention of Congress. The report of the Secretary of Navy, which is now communicated, furnishes an account of the administration of that department for the first three quarters of the present year, with the progress made in augmenting the Navy and the manner in which the vessels in commission have been employed. The usual force has been maintained in the Mediterranean Sea, the Pacific Ocean, and along the Atlantic coast, and has afforded the necessary protection to our commerce in those seas. Now, I want to revisit something because I've actually, you know, I beat Rand and Ron Paul up all the time about their positions that America was not the police force of the world. I'm sorry, my friends, it had to be. If we didn't protect our commerce, if we weren't out there, then nobody was going to do it for us. And this is why we actually have become so successful as a nation, is because we actually started providing that service for ourselves, and in that process started benefiting a lot of other nations. This is why we absolutely have to have a police force. And China is coming up saying, we want to do this. Seriously, we're going to trust them? Seriously, we're going to trust the UN? Everybody who's an enemy to liberty wants to do it for us. We have to maintain this. And as a matter of fact, this is why we have to demolish and dismantle the United Nations. It has no place on American soil. It is the antithesis of liberty and the antithesis of our American Republican form of government. In the West Indies and the Gulf of Mexico, our naval force has been augmented by the addition of several small vessels provided for by the, quote, Act authorizing an additional naval force for the suppression of piracy, close quote. Now, this small naval force might have actually became the Coast Guard. I don't know. I'd have to look at the history on this. Passed by Congress at their last session, that armament has been eminently successful in the accomplishment of this of its object. The piracies by which our commerce in the neighborhood of Cuba has been afflicted have been repressed, and the confidence of our merchants in a great measure restored. We're going to leave it there. We'll pick this up tomorrow, and I'll quickly go through the obligatories. I'll try not to get philosophical. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.